When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's up, everybody? It's Catfish on Ice Live Edition, episode 232, getting you ready for Preds and Canucks game 6. We are 6 hours away. Is that correct? Game's at 6 Central.
Yes. I'm on Eastern time today, so 7 Central for me, or 7 local time for me. But yeah, 6 hours from now, either way.
There we go. So I've been watching closely to see what they think the lineups are going to look like. We got a lot to get into here.
Looks like it's up in the air.
Happy to be back. This is your host, Chad Minton, with co-host Max Greenberg. Thank you for joining us. Normally, we do not do afternoon episodes. Normally, we are a late-night podcast, but we've had a hard time getting these episodes out lately. Life has been getting in the way, but we could not miss this for anything. It's kind of fun doing an afternoon episode. The sun is still out behind me.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of like, it's interesting here.
Love a little good little matinee edition of Catfish on Ice.
There you go. And we weren't going to miss this for anything. Me and Max both said we got to squeeze this in here. This could be the last game of the season, but the Preds are looking to push it back to Vancouver. You saw all that talk about, let's make the Canucks get back on that plane.
Yeah.
Fly the 2,000
They're
miles.
They're not happy. They are not thrilled now.
That was just such an incredible Game 5 win. Gutsy, I thought they were done, Max. I will be completely honest. When they fell behind 1-0 and everyone was coming after Soros saying he should have had that, and maybe he should have. It was a really odd goal from way outside, but I thought they were done. I was like, you know what? This has been a fun ride. Time to maybe start getting ready for the offseason. But I love being proven wrong by this team.
Oh, yeah.
And that's exactly what they did with goals from Roman Josi. And Alexander Carrier, of all people, gets the go-ahead goal on a super accurate snipe from the blue line. I mean, what a great moment for Carrier.
Yeah, and such a great bounce back, too. You know, after the first game where he and Lauzon were on the ice for that very terrible third goal against that pretty much won the Canucks game one. Come back a few games later, and he's the hero. You just never know how the sport works sometimes. And just crazy for the Preds being able to pull it out, like you said, you know, giving up that 1-0 goal in the third period of the in Vancouver the other night didn't look good. But as we say, relentless lives as our mantra for yet another day. This team will not go away easily.
And I'm sure all of Smashville was with me in that moment when the Canucks pulled their goalie and were like, and I was sitting there right there saying, if they send this to overtime again on a late goal in the third period, I mean, it was just so brutal how game four went. And you're just thinking the whole time, just if this happens again, we're in trouble. So the Preds get it back to Nashville. Everyone's saying, get to the stadium early. There's a lot going on in Nashville as usual. So I'm fully expecting this has got to be the biggest home game that Nashville has hosted since 2018 game 6, second round against the Winnipeg Jets, I would say.
Yeah, I would say. I mean, we had the one game 6 against Carolina during that 1 year for COVID, but like
this one really feels one just feels different, though.
This absolutely feels different.
No one expected that Preds team to beat the Hurricanes that year. It was cool to see them in there. It was cool to win 2 at home to tie the series, but everyone knew that was a David Goliath matchup. This one feels winnable, even when they were down. You know, it does. It feels like they've been in every game this series.
Yeah.
They've matched what the Canucks bring to the table. It's two very evenly matched teams. My original prediction, of course, this was before Thatcher Demko was hurt, but my original prediction was Canucks in 7. Now, I could have never imagined that the Preds would be going up against a third-string goalie and still can't find ways to get shots on goal. And I got to give a lot of credit to Shelovs for being a really competent and really good third-string goalie. I got to give him a lot of credit.
Yeah, and you know, but a lot of it for me too is, you know, when this series, and I think we've seen a game or game, doesn't really matter who's in goal. There's just so little open ice, so much physicality, and it's hard to get shots on goal for either team. Like the first period in Vancouver the other night, a lot of us, including myself, felt that Vancouver won that period. They got the better of the chances, got the better of the looks, all that stuff in that first period. Yet they only got 7 shots on goal because Preds were clogging up lanes, doing all that stuff. And the Canucks have done the same to us whenever we've had long possessions of sustained zone time when we've had those. But neither team is getting a chance really to shoot. And it's so important. Like whenever you get even a snippet of an opportunity, just put the puck on goal. You never know what happens. And that's what happened when Carrier put that shot on goal and won the game. You never would have thought that would find the net, but it did through traffic. And you just got to take your chances when you get them.
You got to simplify things a little bit here because that's what the Canucks are doing. I look at two different approaches to how they're trying to get shots on goal. I see Nashville trying to be creative, trying to have the backdoor passes, and sometimes I feel like they just need to simplify it.
Yes.
They need to make sure sometimes it's quantity over quality sometimes when you're in a series like this.
It is.
Whereas what scares me with the Canucks is they're not getting a lot of shots on goal, but they are getting some great A chances. It's for the life of me. I'm not saying it's all luck. The Predators definitely have been a really strong defensive team in this series, but there have been so many near misses, not just missing the net, but missing on backdoor passes by the Canucks, trying to be sneaky with the way they're crashing the net. And they've just been snake bitten a lot in this series, not forcing Saros to make as many saves as you would want to see. And like, I mean, God, like Elias Pettersson has just been completely a ghost
nowhere
for the Canucks. Now I'll probably just jinx it and he's about to go off, but yeah, I mean, Max, do you see Game 6? I don't see any reason why Game 6 is going to be any different than the first 5 games. I think we're in for another brutal grind your teeth type of matchup. Yes. I don't see the offense opening up for either team. I don't see there being a bunch of scoring chances necessarily. I think both teams are going to bring the physical intensity again. I really hope the officiating doesn't get whistle happy in this game, because that nothing drives me crazy more than when you're watching two teams. There's going to be a lot of borderline calls where you can blow the whistle, but I don't want to see that. I mean, if it's egregious and it's just flat out obvious, then of course you got to make the call then. But I want it to be consistent for both teams. I want the refs to let them play, let them maybe get away with some borderline calls unless it's just completely obvious. And let's see these two teams go head to head in a knockdown, drag out Game 6. That's what the fans deserve. That's what we want to see. I don't want to hear Canucks fans crying every 2 seconds when a Preds player breathes on their player, but then their players are allowed to get away with murder. No, I don't want to see that. That gets annoying. I'm sick of it.
Yeah, no, I very much agree with you as far as, you know, the type of game it's going to be. You know, we're at Game 6 in the series. We know what it's going to be. There's no reason at this point to expect me different. And I told one of my buddies who's here, who I'm visiting, and he's a little bit of hockey fan, but not like crazy. But I pretty much told him, like, look, this series has like some of the fewest shots, fewest goals, least amount of offense. Like, just expect it to be one of those games where the casual fan would say it's kind of boring. But no, I agree with you completely. It's not. It's going to be a complete grind to get any opportunities, goals. And I remember I read one of your articles or Predlines the other day, and you mentioned something I really agree with. It's not a series where any player can take over offensively. You just got to take your chance when you can get them. And that's why you see guys like Elias Pettersson not doing much offensively. Roman Josi for the Preds not doing much offensively. And I really don't attribute that much to, you know, them actually slowing down. I just think it's that kind of series where it's so hard to get offensive chances. It's just not going to happen.
We're previewing Game 6 right now for you. It's going to be a 6 p.m. local puck drop. Get downtown early if you're watching live on our X channel on YouTube or on Facebook. Yet you got to get there early. If you think leaving 2 hours is early enough, leave 3 hours early. Right. I cracked a joke about it because they were talking about it. I'm like, if you're coming, did they fix I-24 overnight? Because unless they did, you probably need to leave like 3 hours early.
No, I cannot imagine what that, like, I've been a few games where I've even been to, and I was there last Friday. I've been to a few games in the regular season. So I actually I live on the Munbrien Street, which so I walk to Bridgestone pretty much every time.
Oh, nice.
And I've seen a few times where the line of cars outside is just brutal. And like, these 6 p.m. starts can be really bad in terms of the traffic sometimes.
And believe it or not, not everyone going downtown today will be into the hockey game.
Most of them will not be.
So just keep that in mind. I'm sure if you're a true Nashvillian, you'll understand that.
Yes.
And you'll be ready. But hey, I'll take this all day over these 10 p.m. starts, which aren't even 10 p.m. Eastern time starts. Really, the game doesn't start till 10:30.
Right.
And it's wearing me out. I mean, I get up early every day, and those late starts are killing me. But I stayed up till the very end. There's no way I was going to bed before that. I'm sure all of Nashville was a little tired going into work on Wednesday with how late that game started. And, of course, I woke up the next morning thinking, did I dream that? Did I dream that last night? Did the Preds actually win that game? It was that crazy. But, yeah, we're about to get more into Game 6. What needs to change? What players are we looking for? Of course, we are brought to you by our longtime OG sponsor, DraftKings. I'll tell you about the current offer we have with our promo code THPN. We got some award finalists to talk about. Two different finalists. We got Roman Josi announced for the third time in his career as a Norris Trophy finalist. Not really a surprise there. Totally expected that, along with Cale Makar and Quinn Hughes. So that's pretty much what everyone expected. And then you've got Andrew Burnett, which was also expected to hopefully be a finalist, but wasn't as set in stone as maybe Roman Josi. He is announced as a Jack Adams Award finalist for Coach of the Year, along with Rick Tocchet and Rick Bonus of the Winnipeg Jets. So that's just another underlying story of this series.
Ever seen a series where you get two Norris Trophy candidates and two Jack Adams candidates? I can't recall that, honestly.
We tweeted that out from the Catfish and Ice account. I asked for examples if anyone had it. And from what I've got, I don't think I've gotten any.
I don't think I've not heard of, I mean, maybe there have been, but I can't think of them off the top of my head where that's been.
I was waiting
in the first round.
I was waiting for a hockey historian to jump in and be like, oh, yeah, it happened this year. And I was like,
where was Johnny? Where was Johnny?
Where's Johnny when you need him? But it's got to be pretty rare if it's ever happened. But, yeah, so you got Quinn Hughes and Roman Josi going head-to-head in this series, two Norris Trophy finals. And you've got two head coaches head-to-head right now. Not that that should affect the voting because these are regular season awards, but it still does make the – it still does just give you another.
I think that's me thinking the whole system should be different. Like, I absolutely think playoffs should matter. If you're playing each other, I think it absolutely should. But you have to change the system. So that's just my opinion.
And let's be honest here. These are still humans voting.
Yes.
As far as I know, I don't think it's ChatGPT voting in these awards. But
and I'm pretty sure they did it before the playoffs started. So it is.
So which is good. But yeah, so we're going to dive into those award races there. We're going to put our bias aside the best we can and make our selections out of each three of those participants in each of those awards. So we'll do that a little bit later in the episode. And also going to get into some lineup decisions, also cover the rest of the playoff series that are really interesting right now. Some of them are already decided. We've also got some Game 7s coming up that are going to be must-watch between the Stars and the Golden Knights, and Game 7 between the Toronto Maple Leafs and the Boston Bruins. Wow. You're already seeing Boston Bruins fans out there saying the system's rigged. The NHL wants the Maple Leafs.
Will they be saying that after they win Game 7?
I don't know, but we're going to get into that a little bit more. But let's start off with getting more into Game 6, since that's what's happening here. Game 5's a little bit of old news. We did talk about it a little bit just now. But let's really turn our full-on attention on Game 6. I just kind of mentioned that, Max, about can the Predators open up their offense? And what do they have to do to maybe try to crack the code? Because let me tell you, the Canucks have just been so they flipped our motto against us. Relentless is the motto. The Canucks, you want to talk about a team – it's so frustrating when you're rooting against the Canucks, but you have to respect where respect is deserved. They are on every loose puck. It doesn't matter what the Predators do. They cannot breathe. They're not even getting an inch of room when they touch that puck. The Canucks are all over them. They're reading passes before they happen. They're clearing the zone. They've stymied the Predators on the power play for the most part. I think the Predators have only connected on the power play twice in this entire series.
Both teams have only gone twice, and they're like 4 of 34 on the power play in this series. It's insane.
I got to find the exact number, but also the Canucks have the fewest shots on goal for a team through a certain amount of first few playoff games. Let me find the exact stat here so I don't mess it up. But that makes you think, man, the Predators should be up in the series. But, I mean, you just look at that one meltdown that reminded you of some other meltdowns throughout the regular season before the Predators really got on that winning streak.
5 days later.
Yeah. God, I got to find that stat real quick. But until I find that, Max, who's a player you got circled? I know you said one player is not going to be able to take over the series, but what's one player? I've got a player, but I want to see who you say first. Who's a player you're like, okay, you've been a little quiet here. Let's see what you got for game six. You're due. Basically, this player is due. They've been quiet through the first five games. They are due for game six. I'm going to throw out one
who I think is not, of course, not a big time player, but we love him for what he is. And I don't think he's done, at least offensively, done a ton this series. Michael McCarron.
Oh, wow. I didn't see that one coming. Okay.
Michael McCarron. I think he's got I feel like kind of looking to bounce back a little because he had the one penalty in game three for the goaltender interference. Let's face it, bad penalty, bad hit by McCarron. Shouldn't have done it. It resulted in a goal against one of the only two power play goals the Preds have given up in this series. And it's fair to say he cost us that goal, and he hasn't really been able to make a play since that's really redeemed himself. So I could see a big play for McCarron tonight to really – because again, in a series like this where you're not – any player has equal chance to take over, you're not exactly expecting your star players to make any crazy plays. I think I could see a big play by Big Sexy tonight. I really could.
That's a good one. McCarron's the type of player that can score goals in these types of series because – as you're saying, but for McCarron to really maybe find a way to score a goal or make an impact in this game, it goes back to what else you just said, Max. The Preds got to start throwing anything and everything at the net. And yes. They got to look for the loose change. They got to look for the greasy goals. They got to look for the loose pucks. That's how you're going to crack the Canucks. You're not going to crack the Canucks with flashy passing and overpassing and they're just too sound defensively. Right. They're too disciplined. You're going to have to hope that Shelovs reverts back to playing like a third string goalie that he is, gives up some big rebounds, and you pounce on those pucks. That's how you're going to score against the Canucks today, right, most likely.
And I think the Preds have honestly done better as the series gone on, just putting shots on goal. Because I remember the first period of game three, they really passed up some looks. I thought they weren't getting the shots on the goal like we wanted to. I remember Robbie Stanley, one of the meeting members who I like a lot, he posted something after the first period of game one where he said, if I'm Brunette, I'm yelling to the players, shoot the puck. And that's literally what they need to do. And I think I don't think they've done perfect, but I think they've gotten better at just taking the opportunities they get. I've noticed on a lot of two-on-ones, they're not looking for the other pass anymore. They're just taking the shots. Like, for example, Mark Jankowski had one the other night. Shelov stopped
it. Sherwood
had one off the post. I think they still need to get better about getting to these rebounds more. But at least they're trying to get the shots on more when they can get them. And every time they have an open look, they're taking them. Because, again, let's face it, credit in the world to these Canucks goalies for standing up when they have to. Shelov's done a good job. But they're not going to show you up forever. They are still third-string and backup goaltenders for a reason. And I guess, I don't think we even know at this point. Is Casey DeSmith, I think, could be back tonight. Eric Talkett didn't rule out that DeSmith could be back tonight.
So I actually saw this. This was shared just recently that Shelov's was the first goalie out of the net during the skate.
So probably
him. But it's looking, and also Thatcher Demko is already participating in the optional skate for the Canucks today. So
but I guess the question is with Demko, did they rush him back in the first place?
And that's what the
same knee. And I don't want to speculate.
There's some fans that are
or anything. I'm not in that locker room, but it was that same knee he hurt. That does not look great.
So look, there's no chance in hell I would think that Demko is going to play against Nashville in this series.
No shot.
But I think maybe the Canucks are seeing how he looks, how he responds, and you know, obviously hoping that they go ahead and take care of Nashville today, and then they can maybe go to Demko later in their playoff run. Because even if they get past Nashville, you got Edmonton Oilers who are on a heater right now waiting up next. And there's a, first of all, it's also really annoying that you're seeing a lot of people out there already saying they're already basically giving you a series preview between the Canucks and the Oilers. It's like they don't even give Nashville a rat's chance in hell to win two in a row, which I think is there is not that far-fetched to think that Nashville could win two in a row in this
series. I think it's right not now. Likely, but it's not that far-fetched. And that's all, but also something that's – I think the next series, whoever plays Edmonton, I think that could be a real interesting series because on one hand, Edmonton can dominate you with their speed and talent. On the other hand, though, they're not going to be – they're not – you don't think they're going to be able to match the physicality of either of these teams, though.
I don't even want to start thinking about it in terms of the Preds' perspective facing the Oilers. I don't even want to think about it. They got to win two more right now. That's
fair
all.
Enough.
I
okay. Yeah, you're right.
But if Canucks fans want to go ahead and start thinking about Edmonton, and yeah, apparently Edmonton fans were chanting, "We want Vancouver." Or no,
I did see that.
I mean, so, you know, Oilers fans aren't even thinking about the Preds right now, probably. They're thinking Vancouver.
Like, come on, because, like, now you're giving Vancouver even more fuel to feel disrespected.
Here's the stat I wanted to share. This was from Sportsnet Stats. Canucks have 92 shots on goal through the first five games, which is the second fewest in NHL history through the first five games of any postseason series.
Which means they've been getting 18 shots a game. That honestly seems higher than what it is.
I mean,
it's crazy.
One of the things I circled going into this series was that really scared me about the Predators' chances of. I called it a pretty evenly matched series going in. I thought Demko and Saros. Obviously, they don't have Demko now, but I called them basically a toss up in terms of who's better. But gave the slight edge to Saros, but like for the most part, I thought this was going to be a really evenly matched series. The one thing that freaked me out was Nashville's power play and their inconsistency. Turns out that's been the case, unfortunately. But one thing I did not expect Nashville's penalty kill to be so effective against the Canucks power play, which was ranked number 10, tied for 10th in the regular season. So give and take there. There's one area of special teams where the Preds are completely outperforming what I could have expected. And then there's the power play that's been about as untrustworthy as I feared it would be.
And the thing with the power play, I remember the other night, you know, watching it. Obviously, the first power play the Preds had was really awful. Then they actually started to get a little more zone time on geez, oh my goodness, my buddy's dog just walked in. I'll still try to it's keep okay. talking.
Hey, he's allowed to get in on the podcast. True.
Well, you might see him behind me.
Episode 232.
But either way, what I was going to say was, you know, the power play for the Preds the other night, it was to the, and I was one thing I was kind of expecting, hoping a little bit they would do, even though they didn't do it. And I understand why, because it's not always it's really not thought of as the best thing on the power play. Doing the dump and chase a little more. I'm not saying you have to go completely dump and chase, maybe like throw it to the corners a little bit more, kind of make sure you got a battle on the pucks. But I remember the other night, because I went back and actually watched the power plays we had after that first one. Yeah. And it seemed like the Preds were able to do a little more work, you know, on the, or getting their entries in on the boards. And I honestly couldn't tell you if, you know, if that was a whole, you know, change in strategy or whether that was a just executing the passes better. But the Preds were actually able to make these entries a little more on the boards. And you saw the other night in the goal from Josi, the give and go between him and Forsberg, where Josi was able to find some open ice again, which is a rarity in this series. But they were able to find just the right amount of open ice for Josi to get in and get that goal. And even still, though, it was a greasy goal they had to score. So again, even when the Preds had that little shred of open ice, they still couldn't get it.
And you know, goal. I am totally surprised that Tocchet did not challenge that.
Some people thought that, I mean, I remember I was listening on the broadcast and like William Mace thought that would be a bad challenge. I don't know. It seemed like a judgment call, to be honest. But my policy is, though, if you don't challenge, you got no room to complain.
Yeah, no room to complain
at
all.
I'm going to close this door.
You're good. Yeah, so what I'm seeing with the power play is just a lot of – they're having trouble getting in the zone. That's the biggest problem. Once they get set up, you're good. But the Canucks are just – so aggressive in the way they pursue pucks, And I see a little bit of indecisiveness by the Predators as well. Once they do get in the zone, a little too much second guessing, not enough assertiveness.
It's been that way at even strength a lot of times too.
Yeah. And so I think that they're going to have to get more creative in the way they do their zone entries. I love the way they set up that power play goal, the way Roman Josi just, it's like, again, simplify it a little bit here. Don't make it so complicated. Get Josi in the zone. That is not a complicated play that they pulled off there. It was Josi enters the zone with a burst of speed, dumps it off to Forsberg, give and go, boom. I mean, that's not a complicated play. And these are the things they've got to get back to the basics here. They've got to start being a little bit more decisive with what they're doing. And they should be able to – and look, in a series like this, I don't want it to be the case, but I have a feeling we're in store for a lot of trips to the penalty box in Game 6 today. I would rather it be the other way around, but I see both teams getting their fair share of power plays today, maybe three or four apiece possibly. Who is going to take advantage with – because when you have a physical series like this, it's going to happen. There's going to be I don't see the officiating swallowing the whistle in this game.
And for as physical as the series has been, it hasn't been crazy in terms of trips to the penalty box. I think both teams have done a pretty reasonable job staying out of it, honestly.
Yeah.
Like I remember there were games like, and maybe a few this year, but there were a few games, especially last year under John Hines, where, and again, it was not like this was the norm by any means, but there were a few games where the Preds would have like 9 penalties a game. You would expect that would happen at least once in this series, but it hasn't, which is good.
Yeah. All right, so get back to it. So you said Michael McCarron. Let's get back to that question I had for you. Mine is the factor Ryan O'Reilly. And I'm not saying he's played a bad series necessarily, but he has been quiet. And when you went out and got Ryan O'Reilly in the offseason, these are the types of moments that you're looking for here for him to step up. He is a Conn Smythe winner. He's been there and he's done that. He's a head coach on the ice. He is a player head coach. And so I'm not saying he hasn't brought value to the series and he hasn't been vital. I know that he can score the big time goals in the clutch moments. I know that his two-way game is still outstanding. And I feel like this could be a game for him where he really takes over the box score, really makes his presence known, gets that top line cooking a little bit because it's been very much held in check. And maybe he finds Philip Forsberg for a good goal. Maybe he scores a dirty goal of his own down inside like he likes to do close to the net. Again, that goes back to looking for the rebounds given up, looking for the loose pucks, loose change inside near the crease. That's Ryan O'Reilly's breadbasket right there. So he's the first player I think of. Another player I think of, but not as much as Ryan O'Reilly, Tommy Novak. He's had a pretty forgetful series.
Yeah. Yeah, and I honestly, I mean, I hate to say it, I don't know how much more I expect from him, really. It's just one of those series that it feels like he's just not ready for. He just can't keep up physically. He's getting battled off every puck. It's just a guy like that honestly kind of needs a series like this to show what it's going to be like going forward, knowing that you got to grow your game because he's not an experienced player. But just this series is, man, he's just looked out of his. I'm kind of surprised he has not been scratched yet, really.
But I mean, if you breaking up that chemistry with Luke Evangelista, though, I don't know.
You guys on the ice have to be assets to you.
And I don't know who would you really put in at this point? I mean, are you gonna put in Cody Glass? Do you think he can match the physicality?
Well, I will say one thing, and I'm kind of thinking it could be a possibility after seeing what the lines look like at practice today. And it's something that follow him. Clay Brewer has been talking about on Twitter. He's been saying maybe you go 7 defensemen in a game this series, which I really wouldn't hate because you're not, you
that's
know,
a losing good idea. A ton of offense. That's a very interesting thought.
Yeah, you're not going to lose a ton of offense. The offense already really isn't there. You're tightening up the defense, and you know, especially after last Sunday's collapse, you really want to shore up the defense like you can. And
So I don't know if you saw this, Max, but Daily Faceoff just released about an hour ago, just released their projected game six lineup for the Preds. Top line's the same.
Yep.
Second line, you got Jankowski, Novak, Evangelista. Yep. Third line, Zucker, Sissons, and Bouvillier. Fourth line, Smith, McCarron, Sherwood. So nothing really is changing there. Okay. But the one that sticks out, Tyson Berry is getting another start today. Really, really want to cover that with you, Max. Yeah. Before we do that, let me tell you about our sponsor, DraftKings, and the current offer we got. The chase for the Stanley Cup is on, and if you're looking to light the lamp, nothing beats the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL. From the start of the playoff beards all the way till the hoisting of the cup, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered with same-game parlays, live betting, odd boost, and more. Let's look at DraftKings right now. I'm going to pull it up and see what they got for Game 6 between the Preds and the Canucks, if it's going to let me log in. You know, so Max, I got a new phone, and I've had it for a week now, and I'm still having to remember all my passwords, having to figure out. I mean, it kicks you out of every app, and you have to
What kind go of phone? What kind of new phone did you get?
Oh, I'm Team Android.
All right.
I know. I've gotten plenty of crap about that.
No, right. Everyone to each their own. You know, everybody has their own thing.
All right, so DraftKings currently has Game 6 between the Canucks and the Predators as a really close toss-up. Moneyline has the Canucks at plus 105, Preds minus 125. Right. So slight favorites, but not by much. And the over-under is 5.5 goals, so they got it pretty low there. And so they've got the Preds as very slight favorites, according to DraftKings. Also got the Dallas Stars at the Vegas Golden Knights tonight for Game 7. Also, a virtual toss-up, according to DraftKings. Dallas Stars on the money line, minus 115. Vegas Golden Knights, minus 105. That's actually Game 6. Is that Game
6? Yeah, it's Game 6. It's Game 6.
Game 6. All right, sorry.
Yep.
And then for Saturday, May 4th, you got the Maple Leafs at Bruins for – now, that is a Game 7.
That is.
And they got the Bruins as a minus 142 money line favorite. And then you start your second round matchups on Sunday with the Carolina Hurricanes at the New York Rangers.
Was that announced? I didn't see that was announced.
Yes, Sunday at 7. Okay. Hurricanes at the Rangers. The Rangers are my Stanley Cup pick. And you got the Hurricanes and the Rangers as basic toss-ups for that game one. So that should be a great series. So there's what you got for DraftKings right now being offered. So with that said, download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code THPN. New customers bet $5 and get 200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code THPN only on DraftKings. The crown is yours. Gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPENY or text HOPENY, that's 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 plus age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/eligibility for eligibility deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources. Copyright NHL 2024. All rights reserved. All right, with that, let's get into this. I really have been pretty clear that I would rather have Luke Shen in there over Tyson Berry because, again, let's go back to the matchup here. I need a guy like Luke Shen in there, defending the paint, putting the body out there, not taking the crap that we know the Canucks are going to throw at us. And I just, what scares me about Berry, yes, he got a secondary assist in that game. And I have a ton, enormous amount of respect for Tyson Berry. Did you see where basically Tyson Berry had like 20 minutes before pregame skate that he found out that he was going to be starting?
The scratches bust at 6:20 p.m.
So, look, this is not me trying to throw any type of disrespect towards Tyson Berry or is trying to say that he's not interested and he's not going to play his 100% best that he can bring to the table. What makes me nervous is the guy's got to be rusty. And he is not a defensive defenseman that I think we need out there right now. I don't expect Tyson Berry to move the needle enough on with his offensive presence enough to offset what you're losing in the physicality department by not having Luke Shen in there. And I know Luke Shen's gotten so much criticism from the fan base all season, a lot of it well-deserved, but the more Luke Shen has been in this lineup, the more he has found his place and found his value for this team. And I don't discount what he's done in the playoffs. That's really important as well, but it looks like the Preds are going to go with Tyson Berry.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with you, and I really don't, for as much as, we kind of, a lot of us would dog on Luke Shen in the middle of the season. I thought he got better as season went on, but in the playoffs, I really haven't seen him make one mistake. The only mistake that people could really potential mistake people look at is there was a pass in game three that was intercepted, but I thought the recipient of the pass at that time backed up a little bit much. I didn't think that was just on Luke Shen. I think Luke Shen has been really solid these playoffs. And yeah, a guy like him, you really, like I say, you're not going to have much open ice, and you got to find a way to win those battles all the time. And Luke Shen absolutely helps you win that battle and make sure that you keep bodies away from Soros and be that stay-at-home defenseman that you need. Again, it's ugly hockey, but that's just the way it is in series like this. You're not gonna find open ice. It's not gonna be pretty one, but you're not gonna be able to be fancy. You just gotta be gritty and effective, and that's what Luke Shen brings to the table.
This sport is so funny, isn't it? Just think 3 months back, or think back to when it got leaked that Tyson Berry wanted to be traded and all that drama occurred.
It's crazy.
Could we have ever imagined, one, that the Predators would even be in this moment in the playoffs, but two, that Tyson Berry would be being called upon in game 5 and game 6 do or die situations to play? Me and you both thought, Max, that he was as good as gone. Like they were trading him.
After I heard the stuff about how Barry Trotz was not happy about Barry and his agent and all that, getting the rumors getting out, I thought, oh, he's going to be out of here in a week. I thought they might even place him on waivers just to get away from it. They had to, but it honestly kind of seems like, I don't want to say they made up, but like it seems like things have only gotten better. Like I remember Trotz was talking at the deadline how Tyson Berry and his agent were trying to get a deal done, but Goodney's like, and he said they both handled it really well. And it just shows that things change over time, and no matter what happens, you can make things work. And it seems like I'm not sure it's probably not going to be resolved to the point where Barry actually stays here, but I think it's to the point where both sides look at and say, hey, we did what we could, and we end on the best note we could with it.
Yeah. I want to get caught up on some comments that are being left here from our viewers. Yep. Thank you for joining us on this Friday.
We got a lot of comments for our Friday afternoon. Yeah,
definitely. I'm loving it. All right. Robert on YouTube says driving in from Louisville and went ahead and left at 12.
And that's with gaining an hour. So that's, I like that.
Good job. Good job, Robert. Way to plan ahead there. Nikki, our friend Nikki says, hey, y'all, Preds are down, but not out. Let's go. Another good friend of the show, Maddie says, I feel like ever since Novak was injured early in the season, he's had trouble.
He's been a little inconsistent. I think he's had some stretches of really good play even since that, but I do think he's been a little inconsistent. But I also attribute that to some experience issues with him.
Yeah. Alex on YouTube says Novak seemed to be going through the motions, but hopefully he can figure it out. Preds paid him for a reason. Hopefully he can get going.
And Preds are still going to believe in Novak. They're not just going to look at this series and be like, oh, he's got to go. No, they're going to believe in him for sure.
You want to talk about some bonus offense if Novak comes out of nowhere and has a big game today? We know he has it in him. I just think it's a horrible matchup problem.
It's so bad for him right now. But again, I still stand by. He needs a series like this. And that's why the playoffs are so valuable. A lot of people always talk about, why would we make the playoffs? We need to get better players. Well, these series like this, if Novak didn't have this series, he wouldn't know to prepare for this. These playoffs are invaluable for a lot of these young guys like Novak and Evangelista.
Let's shift the focus over to UC Saros a little bit. He's gotten a lot of criticism as well this series. But I know he's not facing a high amount of shots, but he's still been clutch when he's had to be. Oh, Gesundheit.
Sorry, that is sneeze there.
It happens. I hope that's not in direct response to UC Saros' play.
But no, it's not directly in response to UC Saros' play.
I think his quality of saves and he's being there when he's had to be has been important. I think he's played really well in the third period when it's time to to really bring home the win or to hold things together. What do you think you've seen from UC Soros? I mean, we got to remember, UC Soros is still very, very inexperienced when it comes to playoffs. And I mean, he doesn't have a lot of playoff experience.
Yeah, I'll say about Soros. Sorry, were you citing over?
No, you're good. Go ahead.
Okay.
Go ahead.
What I'll say about Soros, and let me say, it hasn't not been his best series. We know that. He has not been quite taking over the games like we want to see him take over. But
to be fair, it's hard to take over a game when you're facing no more than 18 shots a game.
Has not been his best series. You know, he's been far. Well, he's been far from a liability except for that one goal in Vancouver in game one. That was like the only soft goal I've truly seen him give up. But like, let me also say this, you know, I look on Moneypuck and I've been kind of tracking it the whole way. He still has a positive goal save above expected. For example, Connor Hellebuck, the probable Vezina trophy winner,
man,
had a -5.
Did you see that press conference with Hellebuck? I appreciated the accountability that he gave. Did you see it?
I didn't.
So Hellebuck completely was very, very honest and showed self-accountability. He said he was playing the best hockey of his career going into that series. And he said he was even playing great hockey in the series and basically just said the Avalanche are that ridiculously good. He said every puck he gave up, every goal he gave up in that series, he didn't even see the puck. That's how good the Avalanche were. So you don't see goalies normally come out and be that unfiltered. But I did respect the accountability. But what a disaster.
Yeah.
Because me and you both thought that the Winnipeg Jets could be a sneaky team that could go deep
to the finals.
And that was because of Hellebuck. I mean, no one saw that coming.
Completely. All that to say, though, for Soros is when you look at Soros, he's still having a pretty good series, all things considered. But like you said, I'm going to say it too. These series are weird for goaltenders. When you're not facing a ton of shots, you can't be kind of in the zone the same way as when you're blocking shots left and right. You're going to be kind of caught off guard because, again, these guys are human. And if you're not forced to, like, walk in the same way, it's going to affect you. I remember I was there for game three and I was with a buddy of mine and it was like through the first 10 minutes, I don't think Juice had faced a single shot. And I said to him, like, you hope this doesn't affect him badly. Cause if you go into a game 10 minutes plus without facing one shot, that first shot's going to come as a bit of a surprise. And then sure enough, the first shot of that game for the Canucks came on that power play by that McCarron force, which we talked about earlier, and they scored on it. It's one of those things where you don't want to make excuses, but it's true. Like whenever you're a goaltender, you're not facing shots the same way, goals are going to go in and it's going to be weird. It's impossible to play the same way you normally would if you're facing shots the whole way.
So look at this. I got it pulled up right now. No goalie in these playoffs has really just been ridiculously good, especially in the Western Conference. You look at Igor Shesterkin in their four-game sweep against the Capitals, .931 save percentage. So he has the best save percentage among playoff goalies right now. You have to go all the way down to a .912 save percentage, which is very ordinary. I'm not saying it's a bad save percentage. It's very respectful, but not elite. That's your second best save percentage right now among goalies in the playoffs. And that's Frederik Andersen for the Hurricanes. After that, you got a .910 save percentage by Stuart Skinner. Gorgiev's a .90. You've only got five goalies right now. No, wait, four. You've only got four goalies in these playoffs that has a 90 save percentage or better. That is crazy.
And one other thing, I'm going to look it up right now. So there's 16 teams in the playoffs. So like normally the way it's been is teams start one goaltender, one goaltender only.
There's a lot of goalies.
There have been 24 goaltenders.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. Different
teams have played more than one goaltender. That's crazy.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. You're absolutely right. That is crazy as well. But don't you think that's also an equally wild stat that only four goalies have a 90 save percentage or better?
Yeah, it is, and it shows me that the market for goaltenders may not be what may not be that crazy going forward. Like,
that's only your main starting goalies, though. So there are some that have started a handful of games that have better save percentages than 90. But my point is, it's very rare.
Yeah, it's
like Demko had a .917. He's only played one game. You've got a few more, but 24 goalies.
It's a lot.
That's a lot of goalies.
A lot of
goalies. And he got Saros down at .879 save percentage.
Granted, the Canucks have had three of them, but still.
A lot of goalies. A lot of goalies on this list here. You saw the Bruins go between Ullmark and Swayman.
It looks like they've pretty much fully given it to – I don't remember who started last night, but I remember they went to Ullmark for game two, and he didn't do well, so they went back to Swayman. I'm pretty sure they've had him the whole rest of the time.
Yeah. All right. Also, Robert says from YouTube that we've done a horrible job clearing the screeners, making it hard for Saros to see, and it can't be blamed on him. So we will see how it goes. This could be we've always thought about UC Saros as being a goalie that can just steal a series, steal a playoff run, take the Predators deeper than maybe they deserve to go. But we haven't seen that type of takeover by Saros in this series yet. No. You are right about that. Nope. But again, he hasn't had to face the shots to really do that.
It's not a series where, you know, skaters individually can take over. It's really not a series where goaltenders can take over either.
All right, so let's go ahead and give our probably going to be wrong predictions for game six, just because it's fun. I'll go first. I'll do the honors. I am going to stick with my original prediction that this is going seven. So I got the Predators winning today. I actually think they're going to find a little offense in this game and actually get some goals past Shelov's. I got this being a 4-2 win, okay. Straight up win by the Predators, 4-2.
I also think the Preds are going to win. You know, I don't know. I just got a feeling coming back to Nashville, and you know the way this team has played. You know, they've been the Preds have been the better team for a lot of this series. I think they're going to find a way. I don't think the offense necessarily is going to break out. I think it's going to be Preds win 3-1 with the third goal being an empty netter.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
There you go. All right, let's shift our focus here to Andrew Burnett getting the Jack Adams Award finalist nomination, which is awesome. Happy for him. Totally expected it, but there are already some people out there who thought that John Tortorella should have been in there. I'm like, your team didn't even make the playoffs.
Not after the way they crashed and burned in that second half of the season. No, sorry.
So let's take our bias aside here. First of all, let me lay it out for you. This is only the third time in Preds history that a coach has been a finalist for the Jack Adams. 2015, you had Peter Laviolette. His team had 104 points that season.
I thought he was going to win it for a while. If it weren't for the way the Preds floundered that like last month and a half of that season, I think he would have had it.
I'm going to put it on the screen here, the history of Jack Adams Award winners, so everyone can see it for our YouTube and X viewers. We like to put stuff on the screen for them to see when we're talking about certain things. So that's just from NHL.com there. So you're seeing it. I'm still always surprised that Barry Trotz never won a Jack Adams Award for the Predators. All those years he took those blue collar teams to the playoffs, and the fact that he never won it for the Predators, he does have two Jack Adams Awards with other teams, the Islanders in 2019 and the Capitals in 2016, but never actually won the award for the Predators as head coach, but was a finalist in 2010 when that team had 100 points in the standings. Andrew Burnett, his team finishes with 99 points, way ahead of schedule. Here's what makes the Jack Adams Award race this year so hard to decide between Rick Bowness, Andrew Burnett, and Rick Tocchet. All three of those teams had very, very low preseason expectations. I was going back and looking at preseason predictions just to kind of refresh my memory on what people were predicting these three teams. And very few people out there had the Jets Canucks or Predators as anything better than maybe a wild card team, but definitely no one picked them to be a Stanley Cup contender or a conference finals winner or even a division winner. None of these three teams. So you're talking about three finalist head coaches who all outperformed their preseason expectations for their team. So that makes it kind of tough to pick between the three.
Yeah. And, you know, as far, and we're talking about this year, right?
Yes.
I mean, this year, it's a hard thing. You know, is it too early for me to say, you know, who I ultimately,
yeah, go for it. Go for it.
So I actually did write an article about this. So, and I'm still going to stick with it because I really, you know, I know Preds fan, going to be a lot of bias here, but I really do think it should go to Brunette for a few reasons. Number one, you know, he doesn't have the top end talent like the Canucks have. He doesn't. The, you know, the Predators finished the season stronger while the Canucks finished, you know, the Canucks didn't finish as strong in the regular season. Brunette's gotten more out of, you know, he's had more surprising seasons out of players than, you know, Rick Tocchet's had gotten his individual players. And also, and I know it's just, I know it's hard to, you know, maybe say this broadly, but just the fact that Preds won on the 18-game point streak, that's literally historic. Like, the only teams who have done that recently were legit Stanley Cup contenders. And the fact that Brunette did it with this team, it's literally historic by even just normal standards. But that fact added to it, I mean,
so here's how
I would give it to Brunette. I know I'm seeing you wearing this Preds jersey.
Those are all very valid
points.
That
being said, and we'll talk later, I'm probably getting ahead of myself, I would give Quinn Hughes over Yossi the Norris
Trophy.
Hold
up, hold
on. And I am wearing the Yossi jersey.
We'll get to that. We'll get to that. Yeah. All right. So to push back, to play all valid points, but to push back, play devil's advocate here, I do think it's between Tocchet and Brunette.
Yes.
I don't see Bonus winning this award.
No.
Just because, I mean, I don't know. I just don't. But anyway, to push back, and I do think it's going to be Tocchet that probably gets
probably,
the award.
Probably.
But here's the biggest thing, valid argument you can make for Tocchet over Brunette. Finished higher in the standings, beat the Predators 3-0 head-to-head in the regular season.
That's true.
So if your vote, so the National Broadcasters Association are the people who voted. I'm sure plenty of them, when they were thinking between Brunette and Tocchet, they went back and looked at the Brunette going 0-for-3 head-to-head against Tocchet in the regular season. That is not something you can just toss to the wayside.
Right. No, if I'm sitting here saying that the playoffs would matter and who wins, nope, that absolutely does matter the regular season in that situation. Absolutely, you're right.
It's a really tough call, though. I mean, in any normal season, you wouldn't have two examples like this of two coaches taking their teams way farther than anyone expected. One thing I will say that maybe helps Brunette's case over Tocchet is Brunette's in year one with this team, he's seen a lot of career years from players under his first year of leadership behind the bench in Nashville. That's something you really have to put
you
in
guys,
favor.
You would not
of Brunette.
Expect at all.
And the veterans. I mean, look at what Roman Yossi has recreated late in his career. He's having the second best year of his career at age 33, about to be 34. You look at Philip Forsberg and the goal scoring pace that he was on. You look at the depth players like Kiefer Sherwood, Michael McCarron, Cole Smith, getting the most out of them, getting the most out of his younger players. He really did make every player on this team better in his
system.
I
could talk about every player on this team, but I got one player, probably ends the argument, Gustav Nyquist.
Yes.
Gus Nyquist, 35 years old, doing what he's doing. Who would have ever seen that coming? Ever.
And that's why it's going to be a very, very close vote, I would expect, from between Tocchet and Brunette, because you can make solid, strong arguments for both coaches. I would love for Brunette to get it. We'll see what happens there. But really, really close race there. Also, I wanted to share this on the screen just to kind of give you a look at one of the preseason predictions, and kind of I wanted to share from the Hockey News, a respected website, and what they said in their preseason power rankings before the season started. Let's get it shared on the screen there. They had the Canucks they had the Canucks as ranked number 21 and the Predators ranked as number 23 in their preseason power rankings. So just goes to show you right there that there wasn't a lot of preseason expectations.
It really is so close.
Yeah. All right. So I'm having trouble getting that on the screen. So we will move on. Let's talk about Roman Josi and the Norris Trophy, which I think it's going to be Quinn Hughes because the Norris Trophy has become a offensive award. But two-way players. I know Hughes is all offense. He's the most elite offensive defenseman in the game. He has surpassed Josi. He's probably the best in the world right now in that regard. But he dips on his defensive end. He doesn't play as much on the penalty kill. He doesn't block shots, and he doesn't hit at all. But I think he had like 25 block shots for the season, something really low. Like, he's not a big shot blocker. He's basically a fourth forward when he's on the ice. Whereas Josi and Cal Makar are both two-way defensemen that do a lot of. Josi has improved his game greatly on the defensive end over the last few years. He is not just an offensive defenseman anymore. So I think Quinn Hughes is going to obviously get it, but I don't think it's as clear cut.
Yeah, and it's weird for me, but again, I got to put my bias aside. And in this case, I do think it should go to Quinn Hughes, mainly because, you know, number one, he got Josi on the offensive end of it. That's for sure. And, you know, Josi and I – and over the years, I honestly am not one of those people who's thought Yossi's terrible on defense. I think he's still done a lot of good things defensively, and he's made a lot of plays over the years. But especially like earlier, I remember we were on this podcast, and a lot of people were talking earlier in the year. We were saying Yossi's got to up his defensive game, and he managed to do that over the course of the year. But again, I don't think it was complete enough, and that's why when you look at the whole year holistically, and that's why I'm saying that. Looking at all offensively too, I think it should go to Hughes. I think if Josi started off a little bit, was able to play the whole season better defensively, then probably, but he wasn't able to do that. He struggled earlier. And a lot of it's probably due to Andrew Brunette's like being in Andrew Brunette's system, figuring that out, but still it's what you show on the ice.
Do you give any bit of a chance that Cal Makar gets his second Norris Trophy?
Very like probably goes to Quinn Hughes. It probably goes. I honestly think I think it's Hughes and then probably the toss up between maybe Makar and Josi, but I definitely think Hughes wins it.
I think Hughes wins it as well, but mostly
because it seems like they tend to go to the guy who hasn't won it before, which
yeah.
Who knows, but that's what it kind of seems like.
All right. Let's close out episode 232 of Catfish and Ice, getting ready for game 6 Preds and Canucks. Looking around the rest of the playoff series, what's been the most entertaining series for you to watch outside of the Preds series?
You know, so I don't know if you saw, but the other day I tweeted out a long thread basically saying a lot of these series have not been close. Like there have been, I believe only I'm trying to think of which series it were.
Well, look, Edmonton took care of LA like right. We all expected. That happened in 5. The Capitals got swept by the Rangers. I can't remember if I predicted that to go 4 or 5, but definitely was not surprised at all.
I'm trying to think which series. Well, probably, honestly, the Maple Leafs Bruins has got to be the one that's most entertaining. That or Vegas and Dallas.
For me, it's definitely Vegas and Dallas. That series has been so unpredictable. You look, Dallas dropped the first two at home, and then Dallas comes to Vegas and wins 2 in a row. Now they've won 3 in a row. We've been joking all year about how Vegas did all this maneuvering at the trade deadline and, you know, the whole ruptured spleen with Mark Stone. How funny will it be if they get knocked out in the first round?
Yeah, that would have been – and they are up 2-0. They literally – and they still can make it interesting and go back to Dallas for game 7, but, you know, they're still in it. I'll just say probably the series I feel strongest talking about besides the Preds series was – man, I'm still disappointed in Winnipeg, not just because I picked them. I really thought they had a chance with Hellebuck and all of that. But, man, they just went out. Like, after they won that first game where they scored 7 goals and they give up 6, I'm thinking, man, they look good. I thought there's no chance Hellebuck had another game like that. I'm just like, man, they have a really good shot still. And then they just fell off. I was very underwhelmed by them. And I thought they were going into the playoffs on a pretty nice streak. I thought they'd found their hockey again, but...
Well, and we had, you know, we had the Level Flight podcast co-host Brian Finlayson on here, and he was extremely confident. I'm not saying that he was like disrespecting the Avalanche or anything, but he was very confident in the way that the Jets were playing. He had me sold. He had me really believing that, the Jets could pull off a first round win, and that it wouldn't even be that big of an upset.
When the Jets beat Denver that day, like that Saturday, a week before the playoffs, they beat them 7-0. I'm like, all right, this Winnipeg really might have a chance here, but it was pretty much complete opposite.
All right, yeah, for sure. So we will keep an eye on all of that. It's been a fun episode. We're right at the hour mark. This has been a live afternoon edition of Catfish on Ice, episode 232. Some things to tell you guys. I am moving into a new house, so my next podcast episode will have a completely different backdrop. We'll be in my new house. Really excited about that. So hopefully we can get a new episode out next week, and hopefully we'll be talking about Preds second round or Preds game 7, or we might be talking offseason or in regular season review. We don't really know, obviously, but game 6 is coming up here. It's been a lot of fun this season. Hopefully it's not over yet.
Absolutely, no. I want to keep going tonight, and you know, the more Preds hockey, the better. I mean, it's my heart's going to suffer. I'm probably going to have a lot of gray hair at the end of it, but hey, it's all worth it. It's all for the love of the team.
For sure. All right. We hope all of our fans who are listening and watching right now before they go to Game 6 has a great and safe time tonight. Be there. Bring the intensity. Remind the rest of the NHL that Nashville is still the hardest place in the league to play in. And until then, everyone take care. This has been Catfish and Ice, episode 232, brought to you by DraftKings and part of the Hockey Podcast Network. Have a great weekend. We'll see you soon.
See you guys later.